Welcome, friends, to the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. Adam McManus from theworldview.com with me on this program as well. And today, coming back to economics, we have an important question. People ask us about cryptocurrency, especially the centralized form in which nations, centralized banks are considering imposing national currencies, a national cryptocurrency upon a population, and the end result would be to control every part of your purchases, and perhaps even controlling the degree to which you would save your money. So will this be the complete obliteration of privacy? That's the question. And is this the indication of the mark of the beast in our generation? That's the question that's posed to us by our listening audience. But today, let's take a look at the three significant economic developments that have occurred in the last 2 to 3 years. Adam, we're going to go through these three things one by one. Now, there are a lot of interesting things going on in terms of the world economy. We can talk about the Chinese trade imbalance, pushing 1.2, 1.4 trillion a year. Inflation is up to 8, 10, 12, 14%. We can talk about these sorts of things, but here's what's really going on. The first is we see an increase in government taxation and spending in the United States. And we've talked about this over and over and over again ad nauseum for 19 years of this broadcast. And largely because the increase in government control of every aspect of our lives has been an ongoing thing for about 100 years. But we've certainly seen a definitive increase in government taxation and spending, and certainly the increase in debt spending over the last 2 to 3 years, the first definitive increase since Ronald Reagan in 1980, George W. Bush in 2000. These were the last two definitive increases in the size of government's expenditures per the GDP. But now we've got a third massive increase that has occurred just recently over the last 2 to 3 years, thanks largely to COVID-19. The U.S. President Biden issued his 2023 budget proposal, roughly $6 trillion, just a hair under his 2022 budget expenditures. The U.S. federal government's 2022 expenditures were $6 trillion with a $1.84 trillion deficit. That was down from a 2021 deficit of $3.7 trillion. However, the $6 trillion budget is still up from $4.4 trillion spent in 2019. The whole point is that we got from $4.4 trillion to $6 trillion in just 2 years. That's a huge leap for socialism. And you know what happened is that we got it out of COVID-19. COVID-19 was the excuse for increasing the size of the federal government. First significant increase like that in a very long time. The 2022 budget represents a 36% increase in expenditures over the 2019 budget. I mean, that's huge. 36% in just 2 years. But that came largely out of the bump that COVID-19 gave us through the STEMI checks and that sort of thing. So the 2022 deficit is going to be about 8% of the GDP, and that's up from 2019 deficit of 4.6% of the GDP. What is that, about double?
Yes. I think back on the 1850 classic called The Law by Frederick Bastiat. He put forward a powerful refutation of Karl Marx's Communist Manifesto, which was interestingly published just 2 years prior. And Bastiat says that socialism, which we're seeing in huge measures today, constitutes legal plunder. And he talked about the proper function of the law morality, the vicious circle of socialism, and the basis for stable government. He was a French political libertarian and economist, a very eloquent champion of the concept that property rights and individual freedoms flowed from natural law. And we're seeing a total rejection of that in the latest incarnation of our government under Joe Biden, aren't we?
Yeah, I do a comparison in Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West, on the percent that various governments took of people's income all the way back to the Roman Empire, you know, the first century or so. And what you see is, you know, typically between 3 and 4 and 5 and 6% of the people's income taxed by the Roman government, taxed by Henry VIII. I think Henry VIII was polling 2-3% of the people's income. So the king really didn't have that much control over the entire economy. But fast forward that into the 20th century, and what do you get? Well, you're upwards of 24%, up to 35% now, upwards of, I think it was roughly 51% of the people's income taxed at the, or expenditured at the local, state, and federal level during 2020, 2021. Now we're probably shaving off just ever so slightly down into the 40s.
But if you compare that to what it's been in the history of the world, we are looking at the most expensive governments in the history of the world. And, you know, you give government that kind of money to spend, that kind of control, that kind of power, and the end result is going to be pretty significant tyranny. Here's what 1 Samuel 8 gives us, and I take this as divine wisdom as to, you know, how we should limit government's take of the people's income. 1 Samuel chapter 8, God is warning the children of Israel that a king will go to the extent that he will take a tenth of your sheep and you will be his servants. You will cry out in that day because of your king whom you have chosen for yourselves, and the Lord will not hear you in that day. And so, you know, this is probably the most precise limit to government placed upon governments by Scripture.
I love that.
And by divine revelation here, you know, the limit is 10%. We're way over that. We're upwards of 40, 45, 51%, depending on, you know, which numbers you're looking at. But, yeah, four or five times what, God warned the people of Israel of in 1 Samuel chapter 8. And don't forget the Ray Stevens hit. The Ray Stevens hit that came out, what was that, like 15 years ago? Remember Ray Stevens? Ahab the Arab and all the funny songs, but he came out with a song, if 10% is good enough for Jesus, it ought to be good enough for Uncle Sam. You can YouTube it if you want, but, you know, the wisdom of Ray Stevens is certainly something that we should pay attention to.
I love that you selected 1 Samuel 8, that passage, not just for a discussion here on Generations, but for the worldview for the recent Tuesday broadcast. It was powerful. God and Samuel discouraged the people from even considering a king. They wanted to be like their neighbors and have a king, and they got someone who, you know, was handsome and tall, and I'm not sure he had a whole lot else going for him, because he fell pretty quickly by his own demise through jealousy and the plunder. But boy, to think that Samuel had warned them thousands of years ago, hey, if you're going to have a king, he'll take a tenth of your sheep and make you servants, and you're going to cry out. The key point in all that, Lord will not hear you in that day. I wonder how many of our prayers are bouncing off the ceiling because we as a country have elected President Joe Biden, who keeps writing checks and sending the stimulus checks out.
Well, the 2022 budget presented by the president represents a 36% increase in expenditures in just 2 years, or 3 years, from 2019. And that, you know, provides a little bit of a break between 2019 and 2020, a three-year break, or roughly a three-year break for the COVID-19 crisis. And it was the COVID-19 crisis that gave something of a boost to government budgets in America. We're settling out at, I'm going to say, roughly 25% of the GDP. Add to that local and state governments, and you're upwards of 40% of the GDP. 40% of the people's income spent by governments at all three levels in the United States. And friends, that constitutes a significant tyranny. Most significant tyranny in the history of the world, brought on largely by, well, the voters who continue to vote these guys as their kings and as their dictators. I'm sorry, their representatives. Well, we'll be back in just a moment, friends. The first very, very important significant economic development is the increase in the size of government and the purview of government in the life of the average American today, represented by the 2022 budget. Be back with more in just a moment on the Generations Broadcast.
Are you wondering what the future holds for you and your family? During uncertain times, we know one thing for sure. There's an abundance of opportunities waiting for us as we carry out the mission of God in taking the glorious gospel to the ends of the earth. And it starts with our kids. Join us this spring for the Homeschool of the Future online summit, a week-long boot camp targeted to help us stay on mission. The event is loaded with world-class speakers, including Dr. Al Mohler, Michael Ferris, Heidi St. John, Ken Ham, Rachel Carmen, Vodi Bakum, Todd Wilson, and so many more. And it's all free, April 4th through 8th. Register now for a week that will refill your vision, refine your strategy, and recharge your energy for the mission. You can sign up for free today. Just go to homeschoolsummits.com/event. That's homeschoolsummits.com/event.
And we're back on the Generations Broadcast. Kevin Swanson with you. Just finished a book called How the World Runs, about a 350, 400-page book that introduces a 14-year-old and everybody else to the macroeconomy, including things like quantitative easing and big budgets and what's going on in the world, but also introduces how we can operate as Christians and as the average person should operate in the microeconomy as a faithful follower of Jesus Christ. But the three most significant things, trying to boil this down and make it easy for the pedestrian thinker to absorb what's going on right now in the world, especially our world, the first of which is the massive increase in Western governments and the United States federal government. The second is what I call the most insidious form of stealing in the world, which has picked up big time since 2008 and even bigger time in the last 2 to 3 years. It's called quantitative easing. Quantitative easing is where the government buys its own bonds using money it creates out of thin air. Well, you say, well, the Federal Reserve buys the bonds using money the Federal Reserve creates out of thin air. You could say it that way, but either way, government is buying its own bonds using money it creates out of thin air. That's what okay. introduces that money into the economy. That, my friends, is the ultimate reason for inflation. That's why, you know, that's why you got a pay increase of 3% last year, and you're dealing with 9, 10, 12% inflation. So you've lost about 6, 8% of the value of your income. Okay, so that's why. Because government is ripping you off.
Well, and
well,
it's quantitative
easing
so
is the most insidious form of stealing in the world.
It's gone from $1 trillion in 2008 to $9 trillion quantitative easing today. I mean, that's a huge jump, obviously.
That's ninefold. That's ninefold, isn't it? That's ninefold.
Yeah. Right.
It's gone from $1 trillion of quantitative easing supplied by the Federal Reserve 2008 to $9 trillion. And it was up to $3.5 trillion in 2019. So what is that? Almost a threefold increase in just 2 years.
The government is stealing us blind through this quantitative easing. It's helpful to have the information, but what can the average person do?
It's interesting. I interviewed a guy on this one time. A guy wrote a book on economy from a Christian perspective and brought out some of these issues. And they said, well, the best thing you can do is go home and teach your children the Word of God. Teach your children the book of Proverbs. And it's effectively what we do as a ministry. We have our Proverbs Bible study guides that we've been pushing out for the last 15 years. And of course, how the world runs and your part in it. You say, well, you're only going to impact, you know, 6,000 households who pick up copies of these books. Well, that's a start, Adam. That's a start. You know, you got to start somewhere.
That's right.
You know, how do you fix all of this?
Be faithful to the people that are listening.
Yeah, that's it. That's it. I think that's it. I mean, that's all we can do. And I have lists of things that we do as Christians to pursue honesty in terms of economy. While the world is dishonest, what can we do to reflect Christ in our economy, in our business, in our savings, in how we handle debt, and all the rest? That's in the book, How the World Runs, and your part in it. Available now at generations.org, by the way. But friends, this $9 trillion of quantitative easing, up from $1 trillion in 2008, that's about 40% of the GDP. So 40% of the GDP is a train robbery. It's stealing. The government stole $6.5 trillion in just the last 2 years. That's impressive.
Mm.
By printing money out of thin air. It's about a $6.5 trillion robbery. Excuse me, a $5.5 trillion robbery. And so stealing has increased ninefold since 2008. At least for the United States. Now, we're not the biggest thief as far as a percent of GDP is concerned. Japan is ahead of us on this. Japan is at $6.3 trillion of quantitative easing. That's about 120% of their GDP.
Wow.
Meanwhile, China, Russia, India, and Brazil actually didn't increase their QE in the last 10 years, whereas we did. So that's the difference. Russia, China, India, and Brazil did not jump on the QE bandwagon over the last 5 to 6, 8, 10 years, but Japan did, U.S. did, the European Union did. The Bank of Japan vowed to buy an unlimited number of Japanese government bonds just recently. This would have been the last couple of weeks, in order to hold the bond rate down to 0.25% target. This is literally quantitative easing infinity. If the central bank is going to buy an unlimited quantity of bonds, That means it will create an unlimited quantity of yen out of thin air. So Japan is just a skosh ahead of us on this one. And this, according to ZeroHedge.com, as of this morning, the Bank of Japan is QE to the 10th power now for Japan. Think about this from an investor perspective. The Bank of Japan is willing to buy bonds at an artificially high price. Why wouldn't you sell your bonds to them? This creates a scenario where the central bank could potentially own virtually all of the government bonds if it follows through with this scheme to the bitter end. And they say this is what's happened in the United States as well. It's just that Japan is a little bit ahead of us on this.
Yeah.
Why did the Japanese do this? Well, they're trying to hide the problem. Japanese are good at this kind of thing. But here in America, the Federal Reserve can't raise interest rates to beat the inflation rate they created by the massive quantitative easing injections of the last 3 years. They brought the inflation problem upon us, but they can't raise the interest rates to beat the inflation rate. They're raising it, you know, marginally by about 0.5%, but, you know, 1% isn't going to beat an inflation rate of 9%. Nobody wants to buy government bonds at 2.45% interest rates, which is what it is this morning, when the inflation rate is running 8 to 12%. That's ridiculous. Who wants to do that? You know, invest in bonds, you're making 2.45% while the inflation rate's running 8 to 12% per year. Lifting interest rates for the largest housing bubble in American history isn't a wise thing either. That's going to bring out the popping of the biggest bubble in American history. So we're on a knife edge, my friends. We're looking at the failure of the Fed, the failure of government economic manipulation to save us, the failure of confidence in governments, the failure of a world economy unraveling before our eyes right at this very moment. But that brings us to the third and, I guess, most scary matter that's come up in the last 2 to 3 years when it comes to the national economy, and that is cryptocurrency. What we have is something of a battle of tyranny and anarchy playing off on each other in the currency market. Obviously, cryptocurrency has been around since, well, about 2008. And now the national governments are jumping on the bandwagon on national currency or national cryptocurrency. Zero Hedge also reported that 90 central banks, representing about half the world's nations, are experimenting with or already piloting central bank digital currencies. Three CBDCs have already gone fully live in the past 2 years. So I see BDC, we're talking about central bank digital currencies. Three of them have gone fully live in the last 2 years. The Dcash in the Eastern Caribbean, the Sand Dollar in the Bahamas, and the Inara in Nigeria. The International Monetary Fund, the world's most powerful supranational national financial institution, has been lending its expertise to the rollout of the CBDCs. Well, there's lots of concerns about this, Adam. Lots of concerns about these government-controlled, government-issued national digital currencies. Lots of concerns about it. And we can go over some of them listed on the ZeroHedge.com article. The governments will have the ability to track every purchase we make and determine what we can and cannot spend our money on.
Well, you know, I think about Canada and how the prime minister seized on people's bank accounts who had donated to the Canadian truck convoy objecting to the vaccine mandates. To me, in my lifetime, that was unprecedented. And I guess we'll see a whole lot more of that if we convert to these cryptocurrency templates across the board. Isn't that right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what it looks like. I mean, this is what they could do. Now, the central banks and the national governments are stepping up. Well, we'd never do that. We would never, you know, we have the potential. We would have the capability of controlling every aspect of the economy and every dime you spend. But, you know, we wouldn't do anything like that. To which you would say,
right. Sure.
Yeah. I was born at night, but I wasn't born last night, you know.
Right.
The Fed could directly subtract taxes and fees from your account.
Yikes.
In real time with every transaction or paycheck if it wished. There would be no more tax evasion. The Fed would have complete record of every transaction made by every single person. Money laundering, terrorist financing, any other unapproved transaction would become extremely difficult. Fines, such as fines for speeding or jaywalking, could be levied in real time. Imagine that. You go jaywalking,
wow.
You go home, and you just got gigged $147, you know, you check out your account, you're like, oh, I just lost $147. Combining digital currencies with digital IDs while phasing out or even banning the use of cash would grant governments and central banks the ability not only to track every purchase you make, but also to determine what you can and cannot spend your money on. It could also be used to strongly encourage desirable social and political behavior while penalizing those who do not toe the line. Beyond having far greater control over people's spending habits, central banks would also have the possibility of taking interest rates into far deeper negative territory. That is, you know, they can go crazy with their quantitative easing, go negative on the interest rates. And then, of course, at that point, you're harming every saver in the country at that point.
I'm reminded of Revelation 13, verses 16 through 18, which says, it causes all, both small and great, both rich and poor, free and slave, to be marked on the right hand or the forehead, so that no one can buy or sell unless he has the mark, that is, the name of the beast or the number of its name. This calls for wisdom. Let the one who has understanding calculate the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. Is there any connection, in your view, between cryptocurrency and the mark of the beast?
Well, that's exactly the question that Dylan sent into our talk program. He was asking the question about this. He said, hey, comment on this, how it plays into the end times narrative. I can't help but think of the mark of the beast necessary for buying and selling. In Revelation 13, you can see how they could use the programmable digital currency to control everything, movement of people groups, by restricting where they spend their money, which we talk about, what you're allowed to buy or sell, how much quantity you can get, what you're... prices are versus another individual who's allowed to do business freely, who's not in favor, is hampered. Not only could they track every transaction, but they can control these transactions. They could also discourage saving by putting time limits on the money. Wow. He says, how does Revelation 13 tie into this kind of thing? And my answer would simply be that the big government control is a beastly powerful tendency. I'm not saying that this is the beast of Revelation, but the sort of thing that powerful governments have been doing all the way back to the Roman governments of the first century. So as Christians, I think we resist the big government controls. We certainly don't trust in these governments. We don't worship the state. We need to obey God rather than men and pick our battles, identify those areas in which the beast state is jumping jurisdictions. For instance, governments should have zero control over the tithing to a church. Charity is probably the best example. How we might use commodities over currency, the provision of free food, clothing, medical work, maintenance work, voluntary building, in some sort of bartering or free exchange agreements, instead of relying on government-controlled cryptocurrency systems. So if this kind of thing were to happen, friends, we as Christians are going to have to be sharp to these things. Man seeks ultimate control over systems. When he finds that he has messed up everything with the control he had, which is what's happened thus far by the central banks, what is he going to do? Well, he seeks more control to fix the problems he created for himself. The problem, he says, is I just didn't have enough control to begin with. I wasn't in absolute control. If I was in absolute control, everything would have been wonderful. So that's the mentality of these guys who are going to do their best to cinch up more control over the economy. But here's our answer to that. What's messed up the economy is stealing, debt, greed, redistribution of wealth, the growth of government past the jurisdiction of boundaries that God has placed on it by 1 Samuel chapter 8, or the de-incentivizing of the free market by socialism and stealing and corruption at the highest levels. It's corruption that discourages the free market. And increasing control will only increase the potential for more corruption at the highest levels of society that will destroy economies for good. So that's where they're going with this. Just keep that in mind. Total control means total corruption, which means total destruction. That's where these national economies are going. The internet, social media, cryptocurrency are massively decentralized, almost anarchical, socially destabilizing elements. And what happens is the governments are going to do their best to control these things. So the anarchy plays off on the tyranny. Eventually, the tyranny will attempt to overwhelm the anarchy. The only solution to this, of course, is God's law. The only solution to this is to bring God's law to bear and limit the jurisdictions of family, church, and state according to God's law. And that would reintroduce something of a stability for national economies. So I think Christianity and the salt and light that we provide the civil magistrate is the only hope to restore anything of a stable economy or a functional government in the years to come. So keep that in mind as well. Will governments control all of these things or ban the use of these things? It's possible. So we continue to empower our governments with control over economy, vaccines, medicine. Why? Because Americans worship the state. They vote for tyrants, either in the Republican Party or the Democrat Party. And that's why inevitably the control governments have over the economy, the expenditures versus the GDP, just continues to rise. That's why Americans have been doing this for a long time, and my book, Story of Freedom, et cetera, really hasn't slowed the process down all that much. But we need to call the church to repentance on these things. As long as education is in the hands of government, I think the populace will vote for more government control. So one of the first steps you have to take is to wean education away from government if we're going to see freedom return to the free world anywhere in the world today. Convenience and security may be gotten for us, but it's at the sacrifice of privacy and freedom. And that's the other thing we have to remember. People love the convenience. They love the security of the powerful state. But they'll get it at the sacrifice of privacy and freedom. As long as the populace is full of envy and sexual sin and broken families and stealing and dishonor of parents, of course we're going to see a growth in tyranny. And we've talked about this as well. What do Christians do when the breakdown of economy and culture and everything else leads to total government control over every part of our lives? Well, number one, I think a principled, freedom-minded Christian people might be able to influence a country somewhere or form a government committed to liberty and good sense somewhere in the world. So I hold out on that. That's why I wrote the second Mayflower in my book, The Story of Freedom. But secondly, most Christians have already surrendered their privacy with purchases they make on the internet, with credit cards, and with their use of social media, et cetera, et cetera. So it doesn't look like Christians are that concerned about privacy anyway. Thirdly, what happens when they put time limits on your money, requiring you to spend it quickly? Well, I think you invest it quickly into dirt, land, means of production, gold, silver, tools, or anything you could roll over quickly. Creative investors will find ways to roll over commodity or business investment quickly when you're in need of more liquidity. So we're going to have to be creative with how to handle these sorts of things. There's also a possibility of bartering. There's a possibility you could hold some wealth in gold and silver, even land, while the government plays games with the currency. That's what we're doing right now, and I'm not sure that's going to change. Also, small farm communities might be able to create markets around the essentials without using government monitored and manipulated currencies. Some families may want to be more self-sufficient. And but if that be the case, we need to reestablish family economy. We need to reestablish the loyalty of family, the love of family, and the community that comes around churches in which we restore trust. We restore a love for each other, which is fairly rare today where churches are so fractured and where church community is often interrupted by unloving conflicts among the assembly. So the bottom line here is without restoring biblical community in family and church, I don't believe we will have much respite from tyranny. And that's the way I present it in my book, The Story of Freedom. I encourage you to that. The Story of Freedom, available at generations.org. Also, if you want to understand a little more of the rise and fall of the Western economy and what is going on with the economy, Epoch, The Rise and Fall of the West is helpful. And the new little book, How the World Runs and Your Part in It, written for 14-year-olds. All of these have study guides that go with them and are provided for the high school level curriculum as part of the Generations Curriculum Project. All available at generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson and Adam McManus inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.